I think that's the way a lot of people think about curses. They think it really has that superstitious kind of feel to it. Like,
yes.
Oh no, this person said this and they somehow have the power to do that.
Right.
And because of that, then I'm destined or doomed, I should say, to like bad luck or
sure,
whatever,
sure.
You know, I'm never going to win. We're never going to win.
We're
the
never
going to
win. We're never going to win.
This is Unhurried, and I'm your host, Doug Kyle. You know, life can feel like a race, rushing to the next thing, never time to reflect. But there is incredible value in slowing down with God to take in His perspective, His presence, His pace. Are curses real? You might hear about someone being able to put a curse on you or a generational curse that follows a family. Is that a thing? What does the Bible say? This is episode 31 of season 2 of Unhurried. I'm your host, Doug Kyle. Ryan, alongside me in the studio. Thanks for the coffee, by the way.
Hey,
Ryan,
you're welcome.
You picked up a little Mostert coffee for me this morning. Appreciate
it. I did. Yeah, I definitely needed it today. So,
I do too.
You know, I was like, all right, I'm going to go make a coffee run for us.
I appreciate it. Hopefully this starts to kick in. If I start speaking faster as podcast goes on, you'll know it's having its impact.
I've been pacing myself. I got a quad shot today.
Oh, no.
So,
oh, no.
I'm halfway through and I don't feel like it's kicked in yet. So, you know. Here we go.
The quad shot is all caffeine?
Yeah.
All caffeinated.
Yeah, because their lattes usually come with two shots. And so I was like, can we double that? You know? And so.
Wow. All right.
Here we are.
Here we go. We're off. So it'll be like a 20-minute podcast. We'll be done so quickly. Cover twice as much stuff as usual.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, happy anniversary also.
Thank you.
You guys celebrate your anniversary this weekend. We missed you Sunday morning because you guys were celebrating as you should have, which is awesome.
Yeah.
How many years is it?
12 years. Yeah,
12 years.
So, and then we'll be 20 years in January. So we've been together because we were high school sweethearts.
Oh,
so
20 years together.
20 years together.
Yeah, and 12 years married.
And 12 years married. Yeah.
Wow, two decades.
I know.
Amazing.
I know. I can't believe it. Like, God has been so good to us, and we're just so blessed.
Do you have one of your earliest photos, like, of you two together?
Oh, sure. I can find one.
I want to see that. I'm going to put it in.
I'll splice it into the podcast.
Splice it in. I want to see that.
Yeah. I look very different. Very, very different. I tell Mandy all the time that she helped me with my glow up. You know, like,
yeah.
All right.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
Helped you grow up and glow up.
Yes, exactly. Both. Exactly. Yeah. I have, like, spiky hair and I look very different, you know.
That's funny.
But yeah.
That's funny. Well, it's like, I'll do the math here, but it's 30-something for us. So we're married. So, you got a ways to go. But
yeah,
12, a dozen.
A dozen.
That's
a dozen.
Amazing.
I know. God has been so good to us. You know, we've been down here in San Diego for nine of those 12 years. And, you know, we have three beautiful children and, you know, so it's like, we're just living life, you know, in beautiful sunny San Diego. So
yeah. I love it. Well, we missed you on Sunday.
Yeah.
Everything fell apart.
I heard.
If you were there on Sunday, you probably didn't notice.
Right.
Because fortunately the tech team, they worked feverishly to make it happen,
right.
But really nothing to do with you being gone. It was just that there was a couple power outages over the weekend here at church, and so when the tech team got here, so much stuff was lost on the computer. The connections hadn't been made. We still weren't connected to the internet, so there was all, they were just scrambling.
Yeah. All of our network stuff like that, it when it works, I always say we look like a genius, and when it doesn't, we look like fools.
We're
all just staring at the computer, just going like, how are we gonna make this work?
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, it's kind of like, it's gnarly how much we just rely on technology just to do everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Well, and you realize that when it's not, when it doesn't work.
Right.
Suddenly you realize it. So if you came Sunday, you might notice the first service started about 5 minutes late. That was because they were scrambling until, you know, about four and a half minutes into the service. And finally we were able to pull the trigger and start everything. But it had nothing to do with Ryan being gone. It was purely the power had been out. But
yes. If I were here, I don't know if anything, if I would have been any help. But,
it would
probably
been the,
it would have been the same.
Would have been the same. But it'll be nice to have you back.
Of course.
This Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, today I want to talk about, are curses real? Can someone put a curse on you? Is that a thing? What does the Bible say? But first, we gave away what do we call the prize? It wasn't the squeaky wheel prize, but it was the exceptional effort prize or something like that. Last week, and we were able to get the hat into the hands of Maddie, who's been so eager to get one, and actually it's probably more for her husband.
Sure.
I did the final count, and we do have one last hat.
Oh, nice.
So
cool.
This is going to be the last giveaway
for
the podcast for these hats. So this is a coveted one because it's there's no more.
Right.
Of course, you'll get a puck. And we do have more pucks, so we're going to
have
to figure out how to give those pucks away. Maybe we'll do something different starting next week for the pucks, figure out how to get those. But I've got a series of cards here. If you want to just shuffle those around and pull out one of them, and I've got names attached to each one, and we'll see who wins the final hat.
Here we go. Okay, ready?
Mm-hmm. Seven of Hearts is... All right, this is funny. This is someone called the Snickers. That's how that's their name on YouTube.
Right.
And I don't know. You have no idea who the Snickers is.
Okay.
So if you're the Snickers,
we're going to reach out.
We need you to tell us who you are, and you won the final hat. So congratulations to the Snickers.
Now it just makes me want some candy.
I know. That's a great name, the Snickers. All right. Well, this is our final episode, too, in the Lessons from the Desert. We've been kind of getting some sand in our sandals. We're looking at this section of Deuteronomy that deals with the people of God as they're entering into the Promised Land. It's been kind of cool to track with them because so many of the lessons that they needed to focus on as they were entering into this new season of their life, so do we.
Yep.
And so there's been super relatable stuff. And today we're the final one. Next week we'll start something new, a new direction in this podcast. But I want to talk about, are curses real? And is that something, sometimes every now and then you come across someone and they're really worried about this or really agitated because they're wondering, is this a possibility? Can someone put a curse on you? And what does the Bible really say about that? And the reason it ties in so well with what we talked about on Sunday, but it's something that I didn't have the time to really go into in the message, is that the story from Deuteronomy 11 explains how when the Israelites would go into the Promised Land, that they were going to have this ceremony where they would gather together between these two mountains. They're really more like hills because, you know, there's not these huge mountains in Israel, a couple larger ones, but these are more like what we call hills, Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. And from one, they would shout the blessings of God on the people, and the other, they would shout the curses. It was meant to be this reminder to the people in the land that if they followed God, they would be blessed. If they didn't follow God, if they disobeyed his commandments, these curses would fall upon them. And it kind of raises the question, what does that say? Are there really curses in life, and what does that mean? And the passage says this in Deuteronomy 11:26, see, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing if you obey the commands of the Lord your God, and the curse if you disobey the commands of the Lord your God. So there's clearly these opposite extremes, blessings and curses in the Christian life. And what does that mean for us today? And how does that apply to when we talk about being cursed? Is there a parallel? And this really comes out of a conversation I had with someone after the service that was sort of worried that could be a possibility for a friend of theirs.
Mm.
And even hearing about this message kind of raised that in their mind. So it made me think, this would be worth exploring a little bit more deeply.
Yeah.
Right. Well, here it's used as the opposite of blessings. It's clearly, you know, blessings are on one side, curses are on the other. It actually, the word curse here in the original language could be translated condemnation or judgment. So the blessing is really God's favor, and the curses are really God's judgment. So maybe even sometimes if we change those words, it kind of takes some of the sting out of them. As we've addressed so often in this series, this was a unique time in Israel's life that we can't necessarily translate perfectly to today. We've talked about this a lot, but I feel like since the question came out again yesterday, I'm thinking we probably can't stress this enough, that Israel, as they were going into the Promised Land, God made a direct connection between their obedience and their experience of success and rainfall and crops and, you know, good things happening in their lives, even being able to bear children and have a generation come after them and grandkids, and all of that was connected. But even in our series, Wes, a few weeks ago was preaching one of the messages, and Wes talked about how in their case, childlessness would be an evidence that they weren't following the Lord, and children. But we can't make that parallel today, just because someone can't have children, it's somehow that they're being disobedient. And if you can have children, somehow you're being obedient. Obviously, the Bible is clear everywhere else that that's not a connection that we can make.
Right.
Even in the Old Testament and the New Testament. But so this was a very unique time in Israel's history where the purity of their faith and their purity of their obedience was so important that God set that up as a direct correlation for those early years. So we've said that often. We know in so many other places in the Bible, and we've talked about in this podcast, you can't make the equation that success means you've been blessed and problems mean you've been cursed. And I want to say it over and over again because people get so stumbled by that.
Yeah.
It really messes them up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we want, you know, you want the 1 + 1 = 2. You know what I mean? You want a reason why things are going in a bad direction or things aren't working out the way that you want it to. But sometimes that's just life. And, you know, God is still faithful through those times, you know, in our lives of struggles and problems and things like that. It doesn't mean that we're, you know, falling away from. Now there are things that we do that do pull us away.
Yes.
And we've talked about that, you know, that do pull us away from God. And there's certain things in our life that we, you know, self-inflict, you know, but not in this case, you know what I mean? Like this is a case where in most areas of our life, if something happens, it's not because we're not following God or not faithful, you know?
It's helpful to know that too, when you read this passage, because we have to, and so in the message, for example, I really made the connection that for us today, these are spiritual blessings rather than material blessings that God offers us. He still offers us blessings that are spiritual, and and we will experience cursings or judgment or, you know, some of these, the problems that come our way if we make poor choices.
Mm-hmm.
That's still gonna happen. But that's the connection to this passage. So I bring that up because it's a very interesting story where they are told these blessings and the curses, and they make them is connected directly to their obedience and disobedience. Having said that, there is a connection for us. But I want to now step back and look at the larger question, which this sort of just hints at, this passage. What's the big picture answer? Are curses real? Are curses a real thing? The short answer is yes, but not the way many people think.
Mm.
Yes, but not the way many people think.
Yeah.
Many people, when they think about curses, they think about they're sort of like it's a magical spell that someone can put on you or bad luck that's just going to automatically come your way. It's going to control your life, and there's nothing you can do to avoid it. It's just been placed upon you, and now you're trapped. Now you're inevitably going to, bad things are going to happen. This rain cloud is following you around, and it's always going to be bad. That's the way we think about it, right?
Right. Well, what came to mind because Mandy and I were gone yesterday, so we listened to the message last night, and what came to mind was we were talking, and in hockey.
First of all, can I just cut you off?
Sure.
And say, kudos for listening to the message last week. You're on your anniversary weekend, and you missed one Sunday, and you guys, you know, fired up and listened to the podcast. Well, good job. Well, or not the podcast, but the sermon.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, well, you know, you are our pastor. You know, our pastor boss, as I like to, you know, endearingly call you. You know, but also it's like it feels, you know, it's like, you know, this is our church, so it feels weird, like not. Yeah. You feel like you miss out on something. You know what I mean? Like, and I know it's just the message, so I didn't know any of the tech problems that were happening.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, oh, look at that.
You were oblivious. You're going, oh, it looks like it went fine.
Look at that. They don't need me.
Little did you know. All right. So you're gonna tell a hockey story. What a surprise.
What a surprise.
All right. So they make a parallel with hockey.
ongoing telly of the C.S. Lewis hockey references.
Yeah.
And I literally was listening to a Phil Wickham song before you came in and sat down.
There you go.
So here we are.
Okay. There we go. So go ahead.
So what came to mind was that in hockey, there's the Stanley Cup, right? Which is the championship cup, right? Now, before the Stanley Cup, there's another cup that's called the Conn Smythe Cup.
Okay.
It's given to the Eastern Conference team and the Western Conference team before they face off in the Stanley Cup, right? Now, there is a curse, okay?
Yeah.
With the trophy that you're, as a hockey player, the only cup that you're supposed to touch is the Stanley. You're not supposed to touch any other trophy.
Oh, okay.
So hockey players have this superstition.
Superstition,
this curse.
Yeah.
So there's been teams lately that have been touching the Conn Smythe, and everybody freaks out, you know? So I just remember watching, you know, this last season, and you know, I tell you.
So you mean the presenter would hand them the trophy, but nobody touches it.
Nobody touches it. They either leave their gloves on,
uh-huh.
or they put their gloves like in their, you know, behind their back,
yeah.
or something. They will not.
So they place it on a table or something, but yes. nobody will touch the trophy.
Right. Yeah. So like they'll present the award and all of the hockey, and it's really, the pictures are kind of comical because they so badly do not want to touch it that they won't even go next to the table, and the table is, you know, I don't even know. It's a little table that they bring out onto the ice.
Yeah.
And all of these grown men will not touch it. You know what I mean? They just won't. Well, lately, the trend has been to touch the trophy now. Like, they're trying to break the curse. But still, people, you know, freak out.
Yeah.
Right? So when we were listening to the message, I just was reminded the last Stanley Cup, you know, run. My son and I are watching it, and the Florida Panthers touch the cup, and we both start freaking out.
Like, oh no, they touched it.
And now you just remember, like, Mandy and I were laughing to each other because, you know, we were just thinking of Remy going, "Mom, they're touching it!" Like screaming at the top of his lungs.
And how did that bear?
Well, they won.
They won.
They ended up winning the Stanley Cup.
So now is that, so the curse is broken.
The curse is broken. Or at least for them.
It proves the curse wasn't a real thing.
Right. It wasn't a real thing, that it was in all of these people's heads. But there are still players like, you know, the other team that ended up losing, they didn't touch it.
Yeah.
So now there's this thing of like, well, they touched it and they won. And they didn't,
Now it's flipped.
It's flipped.
Now it's flipped. Now you got to touch it. So see what happens next year if everybody wants to touch the trophy.
Exactly.
Or not.
Exactly. I know. That's what came to mind when you were, you know, sharing the curses and things like that. You know,
I think that's the way a lot of people think about curses. They think it really has that superstitious kind of feel to it. Like, oh no, this person said this, and they somehow have the power to do that.
Right.
And because of that, then I'm destined or doomed, I should say, to like bad luck or whatever, you know,
We're never going to win. Yeah.
I was thinking that's so funny that you mentioned the hockey example. I'd never heard of that before.
Yeah,
I was thinking about the in baseball, the Cubs had the curse of the goat curse, where someone, like, I don't know the whole story, but
right.
someone decades, and I mean like in the 30s or something, brought a goat to the game.
Right,
and ever since they had never.
They
never won until now, right. you know, they broke that curse somehow. Yeah.
Well, the Red Sox had the, you know, Bambino curse, you
right.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like they traded Bambino to the New York Yankees, and then, of course,
they could never win.
They could never win. They couldn't get past the Yankees, you know? So, yeah, it's
yeah.
yeah, there's all those. The Toronto Maple Leafs haven't won the Stanley. They won the Stanley Cup in 1967 and have never won it since.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they only have one. And for being, you know, an original six team and then being such a storied franchise, like they've never. So people think that there's like a curse, you know, with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but, you know, it's not real.
Yeah.
In that sense, it's not real.
It's not, it's not real. But that's the way we often think about it. So even as the Bible uses the term curses, that's interesting. That's what your mind went to.
Right. Right.
You know, that's, and so I really do want to go a little deeper into that in the podcast, because that, you know, for many of us, that's kind of the direction that our mind takes us to this kind of superstitious, very magical look at what curses are. Here in Deuteronomy, God's judgment for disobedience. That's what the curses were. We could, again, it could be translated condemnation or judgment. And we just need to really see that these are real consequences to their behavior, not like some kind of bad vibe or, you know, spell that's been placed upon them. It's really the consequences of their choices. And that's what God's saying. There are real consequences to the way we live. So someone asks, yeah, but what about evil forces? I mean, doesn't the Bible say that there's beyond in the spiritual realm, there's these evil forces that are also at work? And yes, that's true. Evil forces, evil spiritual forces are a real thing. But even in examples like a lot of people would like to look at the story of Balaam in Numbers 22 through 24, where it seems that he was able to curse other people. Well, he was only able to, quote, unquote, curse them because God allowed that in that story. Mm-hmm. And God limited what he could and couldn't do. So there's not this kind of out of control, random cursing that can go on by individuals. Even there, you could see that it is within the limits of God's placing very natural consequences on his people.
Yes. Yeah.
More than that, if anyone wants deeper assurance on this, the Bible says that the cross changes everything mm-hmm. for the believer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great verse, and it can be, you know, this would be worth really looking at further for those of you that are watching or listening. You might want to, when you get a chance, look at Galatians chapter 3 and especially tune in to verse 13, where it says, Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us.
Mm-hmm.
The cross changes everything. And it's interesting, it uses this term that is often misunderstood. And what this means is that as a believer, we cannot be under any kind of curse because Jesus has broken the power of the curse. And again, it's using it in the way that we've defined it from Deuteronomy. The curse really there is this judgment or condemnation that comes upon us because of our sinfulness. Jesus broke the power of sin, of death, of any kind of demonic claim that can be over us. And he did so on the cross.
Yeah.
And that's what the cross did. It broke that. So if you want even further, you know, maybe comfort or confidence about this, a little deeper assurance, it really is built into this passage. It uses that very terminology, the curse. Again, curse means God's judgment.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people ask me over the years, they go, I want to get a new Bible. Is there a good Bible that you recommend? And I often recommend the Quest Study Bible because what they've done, it's really an interesting Bible. I don't know if you've seen this one, but it's really interesting. They've taken like hundreds of scholars and actually not just scholars, but just individuals, asked them to read certain sections of the Bible. And then they said, write out your questions. what are your questions that naturally come to mind from this passage? And then on the margins, they have these questions that hundreds of people have kind of come up with, and they go, these are the ones that most people are asking about this passage. And then they've had biblical scholars answer those questions. And so it's a really cool, you know, Bible, and it's very practical, and it's really the kind of questions we all ask. It's not these real heady questions, but they're really like everyday questions. The question that it asks right next to Galatians 3:13 in the Quest Study Bible is, in what sense did Christ become a curse? And their answer is this, and so I'm just going to read it. It says, when God's law is broken, it imposes a curse, the judgment of God. There again, making the connection between curse and God's judgment. When it goes on to say, when Christ died on the cross, a tree, not only was that a sign of someone who was cursed, from Deuteronomy, interesting, 21:23, but more than that, it was a sign that Christ received God's punishment for our sin. That verse, Galatians 3:13, goes on to say that anyone who dies on the on a tree is cursed.
Right.
So it's an idea that the, this ancient punishment for sin, for breaking the law, was a sign of disobedience. But on an ultimate level, Jesus took our penalty for us. He took our condemnation. He took our judgment. If you will, he took our curse.
Right.
And he redeemed it. And we are no longer under any kind of curse. So that's like, what a powerful passage, right? If you think about that.
Oh, for sure. I was just reading that too in Deuteronomy. You know, so I'm glad that you brought that up, you know, because it says that because anyone who is hung on a pole or a tree is under God's curse, you know. And I just think that that's so profound, you know.
It anticipated there Jesus's death for
us.
That was not just a random throwaway line in there that, that, you know, Paul was able to go, oh, I'll use that.
Right.
It really shows that God had a plan all the way through. He wanted to teach his people in the Old Testament that obedience does lead to blessing, certainly blessing in a spiritual sense for us, not necessarily material goods. And that disobedience leads to, you know, God's condemnation, though, again, grace redeems all that. That the only way we could solve that is by someone dying on a tree.
Right.
And the tree being the cross.
Yes. Yeah. My son, when we, you know, do our nightly routine in our prayer, he always prays. He always says, you know, thank you, Jesus, for you know, going to the cross, you know, or dying on the cross for us. And I don't know where he picked that up. I usually... You know, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I said it one time or maybe he got it from school or something. And, but I just, I always think it's so, it always reminds me because I, at least when we do our nightly, you know, prayers with the kids, I'm always like, you know, thank you for mom and, you know, for mommy and our little peanut, you know, it's like, I try and like make them very like, you know, preschoolish, I guess, elementary, you know, but I just think it's so, it always puts it in perspective for me that he, you know, even in his young age has grasped that, you know.
He goes deep.
He goes deep.
He goes deep with his prayer, like rich theology. And you're like,
I'm like, thank you for the food and for, you know, the roof over our head, which I'm not saying is not important. And we, I'm saying this very tongue in cheek right now, but I just love that he's always like, thank you, Jesus, for going to the cross for us. And for, you know, and I'm just like, yeah, you go, man. Like, he always goes very deep, you know.
Thank you for the goldfish crackers. And he's like, rich theology. Thank you for your deep sanctification in our lives. And you're going, wow.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa. Wow. All right. Well, you go.
This is certainly this would be a great one for your prayers at night. Then it's this beautiful reminder that that because Jesus' death on the cross, we've been redeemed from any kind of curse in our lives as well.
Yes.
And that should be that should be good news. So here's a follow-up question. Don't we still live in a world where curse-like effects happen? Isn't that, I mean, we look around and it seems like people sometimes can be affected by that. And the answer to that is, of course, lingering consequences from our sinful choices, even generational patterns, things that we've been raised with and they get passed down, these negative influences and choices from generation to generation, but nothing that the cross doesn't cover. Sometimes when we talk about curses, I feel like people are giving it way more power than than Jesus,
yeah,
and the cross,
right.
The most important, the biggest power here is Jesus and what he did on the cross, not some kind of curse that might come in someone's life. I'm not saying that they're minor. I'm just saying the cross is major.
Right. Exactly. Well, and I think if we stay focused on the power of Jesus taking on that curse for us to defeat the grave for us, you know, and I think that if we keep our focus on that, then the little things that seem like they're, you know, we can't break from it, we can, you know, we have the ultimate trump card, which is Jesus Christ.
Right.
You know?
Totally. Yeah. Totally. After the message, I already told you someone was worried that their friend might think that they're cursed. But again, I want to say, you know, bad things happen to good people. We can't make the equation that that's a curse. And we can still be under God's blessing. We can still be forgiven and redeemed by the cross and still have bad things happen to us. And it's also true that good things happen to bad people.
Right.
You know, that some people, you know, kind of skate through life and everything seems to fall in place and they're living far from God and making choices that dishonor him left and right. Doesn't matter. That doesn't mean that they're somehow, you know, blessed in an eternal way.
Right.
We just have a very short-term focus, and it's only when we see the big picture in light of eternity, we see how things are ultimately going to be made right with them. So what's the point of obedience then? I mean, swinging back to our passage, if, yes, that worked for them back in the day, back when the Israelites went into the promised land, God has set it up so there would be this direct correlation for obedience would lead to blessing and disobedience to curses. But we've said, you know, now pretty clearly that's no longer what we can expect today. So what's the point of obedience if it no longer necessarily leads to blessings? You know, why don't we just, you know, lean hard into God's grace and hope for the best and not spend so much time trying so hard to follow God's ways? Well, I think this is something that needs to be said as well. This is kind of a balancing principle. There is a correlation in general that following God does lead to success in general.
Yeah.
So even though you can't in particular say, you know, let's use the example of childlessness. You're infertile as a couple. You can't have kids. Does that mean that you're doing something wrong? No, you can't say that. You have, you know, a wonderful family, so many kids, everybody's doing great. Does that mean you're doing great? Not necessarily.
Right.
You can't make a one-to-one correlation, but we can say that these are principles that God has built into our lives and that when we do follow his ways, in general, is going to lead to a more successful path.
Yeah.
You're going to have a better marriage. You're going to have, in general, your family is going to do better. In business, you'll do better. In relationships, in general, you'll do better. Prosperity in general, you're going to be more prosperous. Life itself will be more meaningful for you when you follow God's ways and God's plans. These are principles in general work, though there are particulars that we can't always, you know, explain away or, you know, make that correlation.
Right. Right. Well, you gain so much fruit by following Christ, especially because you have your immediate family, which, you know, you can be very, very blessed in that too. But then you get a church family, you get an eternal family.
Mm-hmm.
You understand the values and the lessons that God has taught us to then now teach our children and in relationships that we have. So you benefit a lot more from life, I think, in following Christ than just, you know, trying to do it on your own, you know, not that I'm saying you can't, but I just think you gain so much more. It's so much more fruitful.
I think of conversations I've had with people that are, you know, I look at their life and I go, man, they really have some deep struggles, some hard things that, you know, just kind of, they seem unfairly, have hit them unfairly. And yet as believers, they're like, you know, I'm just so grateful. Life has been rich. God is blessing me. And you go, that's amazing. Yeah. And then other people that everything seems to be going great in their life, and yet they're far from God, or they're not following Him at all, and they're like so frustrated and mm-hmm. you know mm-hmm. discontent.
Yeah.
And you go, what's the difference? The difference is that these principles, as you align yourself with God and His ways, it really does. Our life is much yeah. more fulfilling and much richer. Mm-hmm. But I want to also say, in general, it would lead to better success mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. general.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
a great way to illustrate this is the difference between proverbs and promises. So I don't think I've ever talked about this. Maybe when we talked about proverbs a long time ago in one of my messages, but the difference between proverbs and promises, a lot of times proverbs are just these truths that are in general, these principles that are in general true, where promises are things that you go, I can take to the bank. This is always going to be true.
Right.
Proverbs, again, general principles about how life usually works, not an ironclad guarantee, where promises are God's specific commitments that are always come true. So the proverbs are these principles that generally work, and if you follow them, it doesn't mean it's always going to work. It just means that life is I like your chances is the best way to put it.
Right.
I like your chances.
Yeah.
If you live according to God's will and according to His ways, I like your chances of things going much better. Mm-hmm. Here's an example. Proverbs 15:1 says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So in general, if you give a gentle answer, let's say someone's really heated up and they're maybe wanting to start an argument with you or a conflict, and if you answer in a general way, it says it turns away wrath. Does mm-hmm. that always happen? Not always. People are just, people are just people. And, you know, they're for whatever reason, they're going to go off no matter how you respond.
Yeah.
But in general, this is a principle mm-hmm. that's going to, you're going to win the day for you most of the time. I like your chances. You know, someone comes up to you, they're hot-headed and I don't know, even on the hockey ice, I don't know, maybe
sure.
that's a possibility. You know, someone comes up, they're really fired up and amped up. And if you just respond with gentleness rather than equal rage,
right.
I like your chances.
Yes. Yes.
Usually it diffuses conflict. It doesn't mean every time it's going to. It's not a promise that you can take to the bank, but it's a principle.
No. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Another one, Proverbs 10:4 says, lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. Diligence often leads to prosperity, but not in every situation. It doesn't mean it always works. There are people that are really hard workers and life has dealt them a rough situation. And there's others that are super lazy, but they just got lucky and, you know, money just keeps rolling in for them.
Sure.
But in general, you can say hard work is going to lead to prosperity.
Yeah.
And so, again, I like your chances. Again, this is what I want to say, because it's easy to look at what we said so far in these podcasts over this series that, well, I guess obedience is overrated. If you can still face troubles and everything, no, it's not overrated.
Right.
Live obediently. I like your chances of having a much smoother, more successful, mm-hmm. more blessed life in the terms that we've been talking about.
Yeah. Well, even in your marriage, I mean, you know, I know, you know, you and I have talked and shared our, you know, kind of family history and family stories and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But even, you know, with that, like how fruitful your marriage can be if you're obedient to the promises that you've made to each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? And how you've seen, especially, you know, for being a pastor for so long, how destructive things can be when people aren't obedient to each other, you know, and they're not loyal to each other and how destructive that can be, you know, to their relationship and also, you know, their children's relationship too. You know, it's like, you know, But you can see the fruit if you stay in it, you know, if you stay in the fight and you stay in the obedience of the relationship with your spouse and then with God and how fruitful it can be, you know?
Yeah. It these principles work.
Yes, they do.
God's word works.
Yes.
And it's not many of our acts of obedience aren't ironclad promises. Everything's going to fall in place. But These are principles that over time are going to pay off without question. And it doesn't mean that sometimes life throws us a curve that we didn't expect. It doesn't mean sometimes luck happens and you do better even though you've been, you know, neglecting God's word. It doesn't mean that grace isn't real and grace doesn't, you know, transform us and forgiveness isn't a thing that really makes a difference. Obviously, all those things are true. And so that's why it's much more complex than just this easy equation. Do this, you'll get this. Right. Don't do this, you won't get that. It's not that easy equation, but the principles work and it's worth it. And that's why, you know, really learning God's word and not just saying, well, I'll just go on my own common sense,
right,
but really understanding what the Bible teaches in life, in relationships, in business, in our just our walk with God.
Sure.
All of those things make a big difference in our experience of success in life.
Yes, for sure. For sure. Yep.
Well, I hope that's, you know, as we're wrapping up the series, you know, I hope that put some people at ease. If you thought, you know, you'd been cursed or if someone can give a curse or you're worried that that could happen to you, I think this should, you know, put you at ease. We know that Christ covered the curse for us, and we also know that we have real choices, and the real thing we need to be aware of is walking in the blessings of God by obedience and avoiding the disobedience, which would lead to the consequences that we don't want. I do have a question here for the end here, and so this in the message. Now, this is just if you weren't there, I need just a little backstory.
Sure.
Well, you listened to it last night. I'll put you on the spot.
Okay.
God used two hills. I mean, they called mountains, but they were really more like hills. Two hills and now you're looking at you're calling up the outline just to make sure.
Now you got I'm sweating now.
This is an easy one. What did the hills represent? You remember what the hills represented? There were these two hills in real hills in Israel.
Right. They were the blessings and the curses, mm-hmm. right? And they would one group, one tribe would say blessings in the, you know, down in the valley, and then the other one would say the curses.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So what's really interesting is those are real hills that for the rest of their lives in the promised land, even to this day, you know, you can look at those hills.
Right.
And they should be like a physical geographic reminder to them of God's. So I was like, what are some other physical signs that God gave? That's the question. What are some other physical signs that God gave that are kind of in nature or that we can look to today that have some meaning? Well, I made a list of a few of them. One is the rainbow.
Yeah.
So that's, most of us don't live in Israel, so we don't see those hills every day. If there's any listeners that can see those hills, man, that would be
cool.
That would be amazing. I bet we do have people though that are listening that have seen those hills.
Sure.
You know, visited the Holy Land and they've seen those two mountains or those two hills. But most of us don't see that every day. But every year we see rainbows.
Yeah.
You know, throughout the year.
Yeah.
The rainbow is a physical reminder that God gave us that He's not going to destroy the earth by flood ever again.
Right.
So there's a tsunami warning, a few weeks ago or a week and a half or something ago here in San Diego. I go, okay, that could happen, but don't worry. It's not going to completely flood the world.
Right. Well, my first reaction to things is always sarcastic, and I really am trying to get better as, you know, a 37-year-old. I really am. But my brother had texted me in concern, you know, and that's what he wrote. He goes, are we concerned about the tsunami? Basically meaning, you know,
you should be.
You're like, are you okay? And I jokingly told him, no. I was like, no, God's got us. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not worried about it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, but not worried about it in the sense of, you know, God's promise to us.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. So, totally.
You know, but yes. But,
and you live closer to the coast than I do.
We do.
So
we
I'm
do.
Definitely less
yeah, we
worried
do.
Than you.
We do.
But we have this rainbow, and it's a great reminder, not just the concern of a literal flood, but really in the concern of the sense that God has promised us his grace. Now, there will be a final judgment that's coming. It won't be by flood, but it's this, the rainbow is this reminder of after the rain comes this, the grace.
It
can be a really a great reminder to us when we see the rainbow that there is life after judgment. There's life after, after crisis, and there's hope afterwards. How about this? I thought this is a really cool one. The edge of the ocean. Speaking of water here again, too, and maybe this is another one that addresses the tsunami, but in Psalm 104:9, it says, God, you have set a boundary that they, talking about the waves, cannot cross. Never again will they cover the earth. Yeah. Very similar to the, really a connection to the rainbow promise. But I, whenever I'm at the coast, I'm always thinking about how massive the ocean is. And yet there's this very thin line between the ocean and the land, and it ebbs and flows a little bit as the tide comes and goes, but it's really, compared to the size of the ocean and the size of land, it's such a narrow little, you know, thin line. And God has, he's set those boundaries, the boundaries between the ocean. And it reminds, you know, it's a, so anytime you're at the coast, which is maybe for those living near us in San Diego, it's a, you know, that's much more likely that you're going to see the coast than you're going to see these two mountains in Israel. What a great reminder that God has his boundaries. He has, he has set this very firm line in nature and in our lives, and he gives us clear boundaries and clear guidelines, and protects us and prepares us, and he gives us those parameters that we can live by.
I always think of the like the sparrow too. I know we talked about that a while ago.
That's a great one.
You know, in one of the podcasts and one of the messages that you gave, you know, that's always a reminder to me, you know, as I'm like going throughout my day, you know, I see like birds flying around and I go, well, if they're, if God is going to protect them, then he's going to protect me too.
So you know? Birds, consider the birds, birds of the air, Jesus said. So that's a great, that's a good one. That, that's another physical sign that he's given us, and we can see a bird, and it should, just like them looking at those mountains would remind them, the bird should remind us of God's great care for us.
That's
I love that one. The seasons can be another one. You know, the God takes us, now some would argue that San Diego doesn't have many seasons, but I think
it does
do.
Get cold around February.
It does get cold in February. I would, you know, I have to put on a sweatshirt.
I have to usually wear pants and a sweatshirt, so it gets cold. Trust me.
It's funny. I feel like all summer long I wear shorts all the time, and then there comes a period that I'm going, all I'm going to wear is long pants now for a long time. It's like, I will never wear shorts again. And then it's like, I'll never wear long pants again.
Right.
But every year the season comes and it changes. And so this, those seasons that he's built into our world are this reminder of his order and the cycle of life that he, and how he brings, you know, spring out of the winter, and how he brings summer from the spring, and he takes us through these natural cycles and provides for us, which is really cool. And then sleep. Sleep is another one. You know, he gives us sleep every night and the Sabbath every week. And those are reminders of the need to just rest in him. He doesn't want us just, it's not all up to us. You know, that God never sleeps, but so that we can. You know, we can realize that he's in control even when we check out, so to speak, you know, and just have to be refreshed.
So that's awesome.
Any other ones come to mind? Natural. I love the birds one. That's really good.
Yeah. I can't think of anything else right now.
I guess flowers of the field would fall in that one as well, because it's, Jesus uses that same consider the birds of the air, the flowers of the field.
You kind of touched on
cares for them.
Right, like nature, you know, like the sun, you know, the sun, the moon, things that we have no idea what's going on, but we know that those are just kind of God's order and his promise in the world, and, you know, you just kind of, you know, you take it for granted as you go through the day, but, you know, we know that he's faithful in that.
Psalm 19 talks about how the sun rises from once from the, in the east and sets in the west, and it says nothing is hidden from its warmth.
Yes,
and I know if you live in Canada or some other places, you might challenge that. but you know, the idea that the sun, you know, all day long pours out this warmth, and in the psalm, it's a reminder that God is is revealing his glory
yeah.
in every place.
Right.
You know, and I like the idea of this warmth. His glory is meant to be give us warmth. It's supposed
yes.
to give us comfort
yes.
and assurance. Well, I hope this has been an encouragement to you, and thanks for joining us. It's been a deeper dive into a message that I gave on Sunday called The Valley of Decision. If you'd like to listen to it or listen to it again, you can catch it on at greenvalleychurch.com or our Green Valley Church podcast. Yeah, it's really great to have you along in the conversation.
Yeah.
Great to have our listeners with us. Thank you for interacting with us. Please feel free to reach out at any time at our email, unhurriedpodcast@gmail.com, or you can make comments right on our YouTube page, right on our YouTube podcast. So great to have you along. Until next time, this has been Unhurried with me, your host, Doug Kyle. I look forward to talking soon.